This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 years ago, Tom Ridge was in his second term as governor of Pennsylvania, but his life changed more than most after 9/11. First, he went to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where one of the four hijacked airliners crashed. Less than 2 weeks later, he went to Washington, first as director of the Office of Homeland Security and now as secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. It's a huge job with huge responsibilities. The first priority is to prevent terrorist attacks. The second is to manage the response if something does happen. Later in this program, we'll talk about the politics of nuclear weapons in North Korea and Iran, Israel, and the United States. But first, Tom Ridge joins us in Studio 3A to talk about homeland security and take your questions. From what you see, is your city or town safer than it was 2 years ago? What still needs to be done? And do you see instances where security causes problems? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Secretary Ridge, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Neil, thank you for the opportunity to join you this afternoon.
USA Today CNN Gallup poll published last week says 80% of Americans think that terrorists are in the United States and have the ability to, quote, launch a major attack. Do you agree?
I think it's a fair assessment. I think from day one, even before we had the Department of Homeland Security, we've had to operate, and very appropriately so, on the notion that there are in an open and welcoming country such as the United States. So we undoubtedly, over the years, have found that those who would do us harm have made their way across our borders and that are presently among us, hiding in many instances within the unique diversity of this great country. So I think it's a fair statement. I think the Department of Justice and the FBI and all of us involved in this would agree.
Over the past few weeks, we seem to keep finding new vulnerabilities to worry about. The electrical grid after the big blackout, the gasoline pipeline in Arizona. I didn't know they had gasoline pipelines. Computer viruses. Now, you can't defend every power plant and every refinery and every internet router. How do you prioritize?
Well, first of all, I think we need to understand as Americans that because of our economy, because of our democracy and our institutions, that we have created a country where we have all potential vulnerabilities of all kinds. At the within the private sector, we've got so many, but we've got national icons and venues that terrorists would look at to strike, and so the list is endless. And I think the task falls upon us to first identify those areas, those targets, that if they were turned into weapons, that their use would result in a catastrophic loss of human life or catastrophic economic loss. I mean, not all, and we've done that. I mean, clearly with the support of Congress, we've identified aviation security mm-hmm. as a very high priority for both of those reasons, economic loss and horrific loss of human life, particularly if you turn it into a missile. Mm-hmm. We've done that at our ports. And so as we go about the business of identifying those targets, we first need to shore up and protect ourselves against them being turned against us as weapons, and that is precisely one of the responsibilities of the new department as we assess nationwide critical infrastructure within this country.
Yet, none of this stuff, I mean, the idea of any of this stuff being a target was completely alien when all of this stuff was designed. We never thought of things that way. But every time we do a show on this program about homeland security, we're flooded with calls, and I assume we will be today.
Oh, I'm sure you're right.
But about people who saying, it's the refinery down the road. I don't see any change down there. We all feel so vulnerable.
One of our tasks is to understand that, and this is where I hope your audience, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show, is to understand that not only has the federal government been working on this issue, but you've got tremendous initiative from the governors and from mayors, police chiefs, fire chiefs, security professionals within the private sector. In a post 9/11 environment, literally hundreds of thousands of men and women go to work every single day addressing the need to prevent a terrorist attack or try to reduce our vulnerability to it. And so again, the department is a focal point, but we have partners out there in other levels of government and throughout this country. And every single day, I believe we get to a new level of readiness and a new level of safety. And we need to understand that we will never be able to secure every single piece of our critical infrastructure and every single venue and every potential target at the maximum level of our ability. We cannot eliminate the risk, but we have to manage it based on intelligence received, manage it based on our assessment as to the catastrophic impact of what happens if a terrorist turns it into a weapon. So there are very appropriate ways we can go about securing this country and making our communities and our families safer.
Let me ask you a question. Intelligence, obviously, is the best way to prioritize. Obviously, if you can figure out what's coming, you can do your most. A couple of months ago, the Wall Street Journal ran an article in the intelligence unit in the Department of Homeland Security that begins, the intelligence unit of the then four-month-old Department of Homeland Security, it says, is understaffed, unorganized, and weak-willed in bureaucratic struggles with other government agencies, diminishing its role in pursuing terrorists. This, according to some members of Congress and independent national security experts.
Well, obviously, they didn't call me before they drew that conclusion. I would just share with you that we are, as a new agency, building a new unit within the new department that gives us the capacity to analyze intelligence from across the intelligence community. We continue to hire additional men and women to help us with that. We have access, just as importantly, perhaps even more importantly, we have access to the information generated by the FBI, by the CIA, by the Department of Defense. So as we are building this new department, we are building a stronger and a better ability to analyze the information that is made available to us. So in terms of the criticism, are we where we want to be? Of course not. We are building a new department. And one of the most critical and important pieces in the new department is our own information analysis piece. We've got a superb group of analysts. Some of them are out of the CIA. Some are out of the law enforcement community. We've got a three-star general who's overseeing it as undersecretary, tremendous experience in the military and with military intelligence. So, again, as we move toward securing, making ourselves safer, we do so by bringing on more and more capable people to help us analyze this information. And then we act on it. For example, we got some information with regard to terrorists potentially using a program called Transit Without Visa. It's a way the potential terrorists could infiltrate in the United States because they could travel to another foreign country and just stop off in the United States. We got that information, our analysts look at it, and then we acted upon it by suspending that program and taking other security measures at our airports to make sure that those who use commercial aviation are safer.
One of the criticisms about the intelligence unit, and we'll move on to other things after it, but according to a lot of people, the Homeland Security Department was intended to have its intelligence department act as sort of a team B. It would get the same information as the CIA and the FBI and then look at it with a special eye towards threats to the homeland. Is that what it's doing, or is it getting secondary role to the FBI and the CIA?
You've highlighted very appropriately what the president wants and what the American people want. This particular intelligence unit's foremost responsibility is to identify information as it relates to domestic threats, to threats to our communities, threats to our infrastructure. It is because of that responsibility that in addition to developing that analytical capability, we also have an infrastructure protection. We have a group of men and women who are working with state, with governors, and with Homeland Security advisors and leaders around the country to take a look at all the targets that the folks in communities would worry about, the refinery, the chemical plant, the power facility, the transportation facility. So, again, in the process of developing this new department, that is precisely why the president asked the Congress to create this new entity within the department, and precisely why the Congress said, we need it. Your primary focus is on securing the homeland. That doesn't mean that we may come up with a different interpretation about some of the information. They call it competitive analysis. But clearly, our first and foremost responsibility is to take that information as it applies to the homeland and then act on it. And we've already done it. We've been operational now for since March 1st, and I think we've sent out about 40 different advisories and bulletins to governors, homeland security advisors, people in the private sector saying, this is a threat information. These are the kinds of things we think you need to do in order to secure yourself against the possibility, as remote as it might be, against the possibility of somebody turning your particular site into a target or using it as a weapon.
Email question from Laura Marshall in Millbrae, I guess, in California. Why isn't the civilian population being used more as in World War II, that is being trained to stand guard or patrol vulnerable areas? Maybe we can defend every power plant, etc. I personally would rather be involved than wait helplessly for the next inevitable attack.
I very much appreciate writer's and that citizen's point of view, because I think the need to combat terrorism does require an effort on behalf of all Americans, law enforcement and security personnel, but also citizens on a day-to-day basis. And I would say to this individual, the first thing we've asked everybody to do in this country, and I think the people in Detroit and in Cleveland and maybe New York who had put aside a three-day supply of water and batteries, et cetera, an already program, I feel pretty good that they took the time to prepare themselves for that incident.
Yeah, well worth sustaining a few duct tape jokes.
Absolutely, and I think those folks understood it. But beyond that, there are ways, and again, as a new department, we are going to reach out and work with the states and locals to provide opportunities for civilians, for citizens to serve. Helping as a volunteer with the local law enforcement in our citizen corps, some of the folks in the medical profession, doctors and nurses, either active or retired, being working with us to develop an emergency response team within that particular unit. So again, her willingness to serve is an invitation for us to provide her opportunity to serve, and with the Citizen Corps, we will be doing that.
Let's get callers involved. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email, if you'd like to send us a message, is totn@npr.org. And Toby's our first caller from Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just want to make a comment that I think the Homeland Security is extraordinarily overdone. You have a 9/11 attack, you'd have to have a 9/11 attack once a month just to keep up with the auto accident rate in this nation. And you look at other incidences like the flooding going on in Kansas. These are the results of, you know, possibly global warming, which has been totally ignored by the Bush administration. So I think they're just mongering fear and ignoring some of the real issues.
Secretary Ridge?
Well, Toby, I would say to you that the point of comparison you make in terms of numbers is legit in the sense that we do have more people killed in traffic accidents. We probably have more people who die annually because they didn't take a flu shot. We have all there are many points of comparison. But I'd say to you that when we as a country are aware of a group of individuals, be they rogue nations or cells of individuals who look to us as a primary target for their hatred, who view everything we stand for is contrary to beliefs they have. They represent no government. They represent no value system. Whose sole and exclusive mission is to bring death and destruction to the United States. You can't do, and you shouldn't do anything other than accept it as a permanent reality in the 21st century world and reorganize permanently in order to combat that, because we'll get Osama bin Laden, but there'll be a successor. We're in the process of dismantling the Al-Qaeda organization. We've dismantled its leadership. We've frozen its assets. We've done a lot of things, but there'll be other successor terrorist organizations. So it's a permanent threat. It requires permanent action on the part of not only this administration, but future administrations. And ironically, I would tell you, I think there's a lot of people on both sides of the aisle that would disagree with your observation. There was a lot of bipartisan support to do exactly what the president did.
Toby, thanks very much for the call. We'll take more of your calls when we come back from a short break. Our guest is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Our guest in Studio 3A is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge. Of course, you're invited to join our discussion. Do you feel safer today than you did 2 years ago? Why or why not? Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And in a way, following up on Toby's point when we went to the break, Secretary Ridge, here's an email question from Dr. Ben Wisner in Oberlin College. Since FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is now buried layers deep within the new Department of Homeland Security, are Americans not more vulnerable to flood, tornado, earthquake, and other routine hazards I have in mind when both the allocation of resources nationally as between terrorism versus natural hazards, but also the discontinuation by FEMA of its program of local partnership and citizen participation, once called Project Impact?
I would say, Professor, that FEMA is an integral piece of the new department. It operates under the new Undersecretary for Response and Recovery. These men and women on a day-to-day basis help Americans deal with the peril, the trauma, and the difficulty associated with, more often than not, natural disasters. And they bring that same empathy and that same expertise and that same level of coordination with the state and local governments as they now are committed to an all-hazard approach. So whether it's a terrorist incident or a natural disaster, you want the same people who have the same connections locally. You want the same people overseeing and training and exercising with the state and local. So if anything else, I would say to you, sir, that their mission has been expanded, their importance and visibility has been elevated, and we've tasked them to do even more, and frankly, they're certainly prepared and willing to do so.
Let's get another caller, and this is Brian, who's on the line with us from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hello, Brian, are you there? Brian has apparently left us, and maybe he'll call back. And let's try Lee, and Lee is with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Good day.
Good day to you, Lee.
I have a question. I was curious if, not only looking at international terrorism, if we're going to look at domestic terrorism, such as the ELF out in California, the Environmental Liberation Front.
These are the people who most recently claimed responsibility for an attack on a Hummer dealership, I think, in California. Secretary Ridge, is this part of your purview?
I want to thank you, Lee, for the question, because not only do we have to deal with threat of international terrorism, but clearly domestic terrorist and terrorism as well. We have and will continue to work with the other federal agencies to deal with the phenomenon, not only the ELF, but again, you've got some other terrorist groups within this country, anarchists, those who, if I might, the Timothy McVeighs of the world, that we have to be concerned about. And so as we go about protecting ourselves from terrorist attacks, We recognize that some of them may be from within and not associated with a terrorist organization as we presently think in terms of an international terrorist organization. So, yes, the answer is we are concerned about that, the same kind of resources, the same kind of energy, the same kind of effort to combat domestic and international terrorism is a part of our responsibility.
How do you interface with the FBI, who's clearly got the lead responsibility on such things? And, you know, since the FBI and relevant parts of the CIA were left out of the Department of Homeland Security, don't you leave open the possibility that, you know, something's going to happen and you're just going to be left with, you know, the same thing after 9/11 of finger-pointing one to the other, to the other, to the other?
Well, I think it's important for your audience to know that in the post-9/11 world, I know that I start my day. One of the first things we do every day is meet with the president, the vice president, the director of the CIA, the national security advisor, the attorney general, the FBI director, the chief of staff, and a few others. So we start the day addressing issues of terrorism as it relates to the homeland. Twice a day, representatives from the CIA and the FBI and Homeland Security and several other agencies convene to discuss threats, to discuss actions taken to reduce vulnerabilities or to prevent something from happening. You know that this Threat Integration Center, we all have placed men and women in that Threat Integration Center, so we have access to each other's information so that, again, depending on the information and the need to act upon it, we can. So the interface that people are understandably concerned about exists. and it's getting better every single day. But there isn't a single day that doesn't go by when not only the principals and the heads of these agencies, but the men and women that work in the agencies are not working together more closely than ever before.
Cargo, as you know, has been identified as one of the most vulnerable areas, either by air or sea, coming into the United States. What's being done now to help secure the millions of uninspected cargo containers that arrive in this country?
I suspect if you've been down to the local furniture store, you've gone to the local mall, you've either bought some furniture, you bought a shirt or wearing apparel, it probably was shipped over in a container. And likely, since in a 9/11 world, what we're going to do and have been doing in terms of inspecting that container is far different than it was on September 10th. We have positioned men and women and technology in Hong Kong and Singapore and Amsterdam and major ports so we can inspect some of these questionable containers before they're even loaded on the ship. We require people before, and you know, there's a body of information that we know there's certain freight forwarders and certain companies that ship certain things, and so we require before that container is loaded on that ship to make its way to the United States, they have to tell us what's in the container. We also have x-ray machines that if we doubt it or have other intelligence, again, it's information we'd act on, we can inspect it there. We now have a program where the Coast Guard will actually board 2-3% of the vessels that are coming in, because looking at the cargo, looking at the crew, taking a look at where that ship has been, we call it a high-interest vessel, and we board 100% of the high-interest vessels. And then when the cargo gets here, we have additional people and additional x-ray machines to examine it. So how we deal with that container today is far, far different than it was, and we're going to expand that reach, because our view is that we ought to make our borders, at the air borders, land borders, and sea borders, the last line of defense, not the first line of defense.
Let's get another caller involved. Gary joins us from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hey, Neil, great show.
Thank you.
Governor Ridge, I want to congratulate you and President Bush on doing an excellent job since 9/11. But I have a concern also, sir. I was wondering if you could please speak to the issue of the security of the porous Mexican border with regards to homeland security in light of the political sensitivities of the Hispanic vote.
On 9/11 and 9/12, at both the Canadian and Mexican border, if you had transited that those borders, you'd have seen a lot of orange cones, and you'd have seen traffic backed up. Probably for miles, and would have been part of delays at some instances were almost a day long. It was based on that the president directed us to develop a smart border agreement with Canada and Mexico, so that as we put more people, we're going to have more people at the borders and more technology at the borders and more programs designed so that we know more about the people and the cargo coming across the borders. These are part of our 21st century border agreements that we're working with our friends in Canada and Mexico. You should also know that there are some applications of military technology that we are experimenting with now that have an application at the border as well.
Surveillance, or what are you talking about?
There are unmanned aerial vehicles that we are taking a look at, they call them UAVs or mm-hmm. drones, to see how there are some really desolate, hundreds and hundreds of miles of desolate terrain in New Mexico and Arizona along that border that we have a very difficult time getting people to on a regular basis. So we're looking at the application of modern technology to help secure those borders as well. We have an entirely different working relationship and a much improved working relationship with our law enforcement folks at the Mexican border. Our attorney general working with theirs has improved significantly that relationship, and we share much, much more information in a post 9/11 world than we ever did before. We know we've got a lot of work to do, but we've really made considerable progress to date to make it safer, and we'll continue to work on it.
I think Gary's question, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Gary, but, you know, does politics enter into this anywhere?
That's correct. That's my concern.
Well, Gary, there were no caveats given to me when I served as the President as Special Assistant for Homeland Security or as Secretary for the Department. We need a rational, thoughtful, responsible system to allow for the transit of honest people, legitimate people, and cargo, but we need a much tougher and vigorous system to deal with illegal immigration, contraband coming across our borders, drugs coming across our borders, and all our efforts, including looking at how we can deal with the areas that aren't manned at border sites. Are part of this terrain is something that we are very much engaged in on a day-to-day basis.
And I appreciate that engagement, sir. I just want to share that this is a concern of many, many Americans. And if it could be emphasized, I mean, this border with Mexico is porous, and if terrorists ever wanted to get into the United States, they certainly could that way.
Well, to your point, well taken again. And that's why we're focused not just within our department, but the Attorney General, the FBI, and others. Because you can well imagine if you can run drugs, if you can run contraband, you can use the same system, or illegal aliens, you can conceivably use the same system to push through a terrorist or weapons. And so, again, we have, since in a post 9/11 world, are doing things dramatically different at the border, made a lot of progress, have a heck of a lot more work to do, but there have been no caveats, no conditions, get the job done so legitimate people and goods flow across, and we prevent those without proper documentation, the illegals, those with contraband, those with drugs from getting across our borders.
Thank you, sir, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks, Gary.
Appreciate the phone call, Gary. Let's try now Stephen, and Stephen's in West Orange, New Jersey.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Secretary Ridge.
Hello, Stephen.
Nice to speak with you. I'm calling about a concern that I have, I think a lot of other Americans have, regarding domestic travel and some of the burdens that are being imposed in a sort of arbitrary and seemingly senseless way on the traveling public. I travel frequently out of Newark Airport into different destinations through Florida and California, and I'm traveling out of JFK more often now. And it seems that some of the security measures have become predictable, like the greater security that's attached to one-way travel, for example, and some of the decisions regarding contraband, etc., seem awfully arbitrary and senseless. Like, for example, you can have book matches on an airplane, but not box matches, etc. And I'm wondering whether or not there's some sort of an internal control that serves as a reality check for the common sense and the appropriateness and the standardization of these kinds of conditions on travel, and whether or not there's very close attention being paid to the ability and the competence of the TSA agents to administer these controls and these requirements more effectively and more even-handedly.
Stephen, he's just with us today. I'm not sure he can answer all of those questions.
But Stephen, you were speaking for the traveling public, and I understand that. I just want you to flash back to September 10th. When you went through an airport, somebody may or may not have asked you to open your carry-on, and nobody was really looking at your baggage. And if you went through a metal detector and they noticed you had your Swiss Army knife, they may have talked to you about it, and if not, they said, oh, the heck with it, he looks like a pretty decent guy. Since that time, we've begun to layer defenses around commercial aviation because we know that the terrorists had turned a couple airliners into missiles, and the catastrophic loss of life and the extraordinary economic consequences were catastrophic as well. So beginning to arm the pilots. We've increased the Federal Air Marshal program so that we literally have thousands on board, and frankly, we have an initiative where we're going to move the air marshals into the Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So
they just
announced it today. So not only do they have a better career path, but we have potentially as many as 5,000 other men and women out there that we could use as air marshals as well.
If there's a surge need for
correct.
Them.
Yeah. We went to places like Disney and the Marriott and say, listen, you got to control these big crowds. How do you do it? How do we set up these schemes at the airport in order to vet these passengers as quickly and professionally as possible? So now we've got 40-some thousand people looking at passengers and taking a look at baggage. So every step of the way, we've tried to enhance security. It has, under some circumstances, caused a little bit more inconvenience. My judgment is most people are prepared for an additional delay or two if they're convinced that it enhances their security. Clearly it has. Aviation travel is far more secure today than ever before. But to your point, we need to continue to train the men and women. We need to continue to look for standardization across the board at all of our 469 commercial airports. And again, I think you got to tip your hat to what has occurred since the 9/11, but don't suggest that we've got it all done or we've done it all properly, but we've made a lot of progress.
You're listening to Secretary of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller. And David joins us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello, how you doing?
Okay.
To answer the question, I do feel safer simply because I know the authorities are definitely in an awareness mode that they weren't in. And I would just like to task the secretary to please stay on them about sharing information. I've been in law enforcement, and I know that departments to departments, they like to hold on to their inside information, and you've got a daunting task to change that outlook from one department to another. So if you can do that, my hat's off to you.
David, thank you. Everybody's more aware, and most importantly, security and law enforcement professionals are clearly at the head of the pack. They want us, and we're in the process of working with them at the state and local level to develop the kind of information sharing that those of us in Washington who feel very strongly, and the president on down, that you can't secure the country from Washington, D.C. You got the first preventers and the first responders in Baton Rouge, and you got them in New Orleans, and you got them at Shreveport. Those are the folks that can act on the information if we can get it to them in a timely way. And we've begun that process by clearing governors and Homeland Security advisors and other folks, giving them security clearances. We've asked the governors to identify five other additional people in the states. You know that the Joint Terrorism Task Forces that are run by the FBI in our major cities include a lot of state and local officials on them. So, again, part of our challenge is getting timely, actionable information down to good people like you, because if we get it to you, you can help us prevent that terrorist attack or reduce our vulnerability to an attack.
David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Secretary Ridge, we just have about 30 seconds left with you, and I guess it's just enough to ask you the requisite Washington question. If the president's reelected, would you return as his Secretary of Homeland Security?
I serve at the pleasure of the president. And one of the interesting things that he and I have talked about is that it's going to be a hotly contested election. The president never has taken any of his elections for granted. But my job is to focus on Homeland Security and let others worry about the politics of his reelection.
But if asked?
If asked, as I said, it depends on the a lot of things, but I will serve at the pleasure of the president until he suggests otherwise.
I don't think we're going to get an answer in the time we have remaining, at least to that question. But Secretary Ridge, thanks for coming in and answering so many others. We appreciate your time. We know you're very busy.
Neil, very nice to be with you.
Tom Ridge is the Secretary of Homeland Security. When we come back from a short break, nuclear weapons and the Nuclear Weapons Club, a reminder of which countries are members and which countries are sort of members ad hoc. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.